Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Autoline After Hours with Peter DiLorenzo, episode 130 for Thursday, December 15th, 2011. Three men, 12 tacos.
Watch Autoline After Hours live at Autoline.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We are coming to you live from Farmington Hills, Michigan. I'm sitting in for John McElroy. The lucky dog is in Austin, Texas, driving the new Malibu Eco. And with me tonight is Scott Burgess from the Detroit News and Todd Lassa from Motor Trend, who's late, but that's okay. And, you know, Scott's had his tacos, so everything's good. I declined because I figured I'd just have a meltdown. But anyway, coming up, don't miss, there's a must-see TV on Sunday. Catch a brand new Autoline with Mark Fields from Ford. And I'll have more on that on the end of the show. But since Scott, you and I are here, why don't we talk about, well, first of all, let's talk about what you had for your two best vehicles of the year.
Well, Detroit News picked for the car and truck of the year, we picked the two vehicles that were not, the exteriors weren't redone, but their powertrains were. And it's the F-150 EcoBoost and the Buick LaCrosse with E-Assist.
Now, and I think you're right, you said that the F-150 with the EcoBoost basically redefined desirability in pickups, right?
I didn't think it was going to do it. I thought pickup drivers were going to say, no, I want a pickup. I got a big truck. I need a V8. And it never, as soon as they brought it out in February. By June, Ford was selling more F-150s with V6s than V8s. They don't even know when the last time that had actually happened.
Yeah, and now that, I think they're running almost 60% now.
Yeah, and the other beauty of it has been is that the smallest engine is the most expensive engine.
Yeah, that was a brilliant piece of marketing strategy and pricing on Ford's part, because I remember when they announced that, everyone said, oh, what are they doing?
And I've driven those out in Romeo on the Ford Proving Grounds, where they have some really steep hills. And we were pulling 10,000-pound trailers, and it just zooms right up. It doesn't have any problem at all. And I have heard, and I haven't done testing on this, in part because I don't have anything that's 10,000 pounds that I can tow. But I've heard that the fuel economy is awful when you're towing.
Wow.
You're spinning up two turbos. But I would think it'd be interesting to look at fuel economy towing on the EcoBoost, fuel economy towing with the V8. And you may see an advantage to the V8. But
for light loads, there's no question that's the way to go.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, what about the LaCrosse E-Assist? I mean, how come you like it so much?
This is what we're going to see in everything in 5 years.
Right.
We're already hearing about people that next year will start introducing start-stop technology. So that's the E-Assist comes with that.
That's going to be on everything, right? It's on the Porsches. It's on the new 911 that's coming. And actually, on the 911 drive, it kind of freaked me out because I forgot.
Right.
You know, I'm driving a stick 911 Carrera S, beautiful car. And I forgot it had the stop-start. And I was just like, what, you know, did I stall the thing or something? But no.
And this is a true mild hybrid in all what we would know as one, which small electrical motor, It assists when it needs more torque, and to kind of get the vehicle moving at launch, it'll kick in. GM did a really smart job of mapping out on the throttle every time the engine would need additional power, whether it be in between gears or at different moments. And the car will, the electric motor assists then too. And I mean, it's, the irony is that they don't call this a mild hybrid. And when they introduced the mild hybrid, it was horrible. I think it was the Saturn View.
That, yeah, exactly. And they've come a long way with that. And it doesn't hurt that the LaCrosse itself is an excellent vehicle.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing it's missing is a trunk button. That'd be the only thing that I would really want on it that it doesn't have.
Doesn't have a trunk button?
No, it's on a key fob.
You know, that drives me crazy when they do stuff like that. Well, before Todd gets here, I think we'll wait for Todd to get here before we talk about the North American Car and Truck of the Year finalists, which were just announced. But since you and I are in the panel, we don't really care that much, but we'll talk about it.
Yeah, Todd can plug it.
So some news this week. How about China imposing tariffs on vehicles coming in from the U.S. over 2.5-liter engine size? I mean, you know, it's the latest shot in a trade war, but I think I'm in a minority of this, but I really do think at some point China's going to, a bell's going to go off and China's going to say, oh, okay, all you joint ventures that we demanded, you're all done. We're taking over. See ya. But other people just say, no, it's just a trade war. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I don't know how much of it's a trade war if you're looking strictly at cars, because there are no cars coming to the U.S.
It affects other companies, too.
Yeah.
BMW and Mercedes and whoever else is sending vehicles.
And I don't know if that theory that you have is really that far off. Imagine if the U.S. had a policy where every company that built a factory or wanted to sell cars here had to partner with one of the big three.
Yeah.
We certainly don't have that policy.
No, but it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they just said, okay, thanks, we're done, we learned a lot, and now we're going to, you know, you're done here. So now we're going to put 200% tariffs on your cars if you try to sell them here, because we're pushing our own industry. I mean, I don't put it past them at all. So, what did you think? I mean, Acura is going to have a big show in Detroit, and they had, I mean, they just made a series of boneheaded quotes to the media last week in Las Vegas, which I kind of teed off on this week. But, you know, I think Acura has been lost, just like Honda. And now they're, you know, they say they're coming back. Now, they're going to show an NSX, a new NSX, which will have, you know, probably a mild hybrid or whatever it's going to have. And I'm sure it's going to be great and swoopy, and it'll be a headline grabber at the show. But in the midst of that, they started talking about how they're actually going to, you know, a lot of time, effort, money is wasted on the average consumer when it comes to cars. And I should have kept it, but one guy said it was a waste of energy to over engineer these cars, you know. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, good Todd Lazza from Motor Trend.
Traffic, and because I work for a West Coast magazine, they call me at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern.
Those damn jerks.
Don't say that. They might be watching. No, they might be working. Who knows?
They're working. Yeah. They don't watch us unless they have to.
Well, they'll watch the podcast.
Anyway. How you been? Good?
Busier than usual, than ever. I mean, you know, this auto show coming up, I don't know what it is, but it just seems to be that and crunched deadlines.
This auto show is going to be full on like it was several years ago. It's going to be wall-to-wall, and there's already dueling events Sunday night with yep. Cadillac's going to have the ATS, but the Audi's having a thing, and it's just, you know,
right.
The usual cluster.
Well, and it's, You probably discussed this already. Maybe not. No. It's a lot of production stuff, at least what we've seen locally, not so much concept. So everybody's getting down to the, you know, kind of the doing the dirty work and getting out the cars that, you know, the public who don't know anything about it, about cars won't say, how come they won't build that car? Why don't we see that for 4 years?
Yeah. But, well, before we talk about the North American Car and Truck of the Year, we were just talking about Acura or getting started. You know, they had a thing to the media last week in Las Vegas, and I wrote my column on it. They unleashed a series of unfortunate quotes that, you know, on the one hand, they're going to show an NSX, which will probably be swoopy and cool and be an attention grabber and a visual statement and hybrid and blah, blah, blah. On the other hand, they turned around and said a lot of the technology is overkill for the average driver. You know, it's a waste. And according to our studies, only 20% are really enthusiasts, and really they don't matter. And we're just going to, you know, it wasn't quite engineering to the lowest common denominator, but it was decided, you know, they're focusing on two things, economy, and it seems like driver friendliness or something, but I equate it to mediocrity, and I think it's symptomatic of the entire Honda organization.
Which is really sad.
Yeah.
And I read your column today, and it's ironic or unfortunate, as you put it, that they talk about too much high tech, and yet they've kind of pinned Acura's premium or luxury hopes on SHAWD, which is a very complicated kind of system that adds weight, very un-Honda-like.
And complexity.
And complexity to overcome the torque steer problem, to overcome the fact that they don't have a rear drive platform anymore now that the S2000's gone. So, yeah, it was pretty, that confused me quite a bit. You know, Honda, it's unfortunate. I think, you know, most of us who survived the 80s and what was mostly a fairly mediocre decade for cars, you know, grew to love what Honda had become. And I was a CRX owner back in the late 80s, early 90s, and anybody who's owned one of those, you know, they were the up-and-coming company for so long, and where have they gone?
Well, they were always, you know, the Honda Motor Company, and they were always, you know, for the enthusiast drivers, they were the Asian automaker to look at. I mean, they did some great cars. And, you know, I think as Honda lost their way, I mean, Acura's really lost their way. And if they just do Acuras that are just slightly better Hondas, then I don't think they're going to find a place. I mean, they've shot themselves in the head repeatedly with their designs over the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, Acura, the new face of Acura, which hopefully is changing quickly, The beak when it came out, and then they kind of stood by it for 2 years and then said, well, let's go ahead and
tweak it
and make it tighter and smaller and a little bit better. And I think the big weakness has been interiors. I think that they haven't figured out a decent way to do the center stack on anything.
Yeah, and complicated.
And I mean, what was it? The Honda Pilot had 50 something buttons, and now the new Pilot that came out, it's actually really nice. They've cleaned it up, but it's a lot of times kind of like the way American companies used to do it, where the initial product would be awful, and then it would get better and better, but everybody just remembered the really bad one.
Yeah, I guess the just most disturbing thing to me about the pronouncements with Acura is nobody said we're gonna make sure they're really fun to drive.
Mm-hmm.
That was totally missing. It was like a long dissertation about why we're not going to really aim at the enthusiasts, because after all,
just spend lots of money on our cars.
Well, yeah, you're almost inconsequential. So why are you going to show a new NSX? I mean, I'm looking forward to see it. I'm sure it'll be cool, but there's going to be a giant disconnect. The old NSX, actually, at that time when Acura had their lineup, the old NSX was actually the flagship, and you could see a little rub-off I'm going to be shocked if we see any rub off in Detroit at the Detroit show.
Right. And to be fair, the TL with Shawd, S-H-A-W-D, and the, whatever they call the sport package, I don't remember, drove one several years ago, you know, when they added the manual gearbox back in that car, and it handled pretty nicely. But again, handled pretty nicely for a car that was too heavy because it had to have that all-wheel drive and too complicated.
Yeah. Well, this is a good spot. Ben, we're going to hear from our first sponsor, Chevrolet Cruze.
The Chevrolet Cruze is the car that is taking the world by storm. And a key reason is all the equipment that it offers. A driver information center, a USB port, ambient LED backlighting on the dashboard, remote start with a MyLink app, two accessory power outlets, one in front and one in the back for the rear passengers, OnStar, turn-by-turn directions, free for the first 6 months. Whew, there's just too much to list here. And you can check it all out at Chevrolet.com/cruise.
Well, we're back. One thing I wanted to ask you guys is the NTSB came out in the last couple of days and say they want to ban cell phones completely from cars. And I wasn't quite sure. I must admit I didn't read the details all the way through. But is it okay? I got the feeling if the system was built into your car, it was okay. They were going to leave those alone, like OnStar-based systems or something that's in your hooked up to your car. I didn't understand what they were saying.
They said no talking on cell phones.
Well, but remember, the best they can do is a recommendation because it's a recommendation of the 50 states plus the District of Columbia on that. And, yes, there's been a lot of discussion on, you know, what about hands-free? They claim their studies show that the hands-free is just about as dangerous, nearly as dangerous. There are various studies arguing that either way. I have to say, I know you're going to say, oh, come on, you're a car guy. You don't want this sort of thing. But I am so tired of, you know, getting behind the guy in his SUV in the passing lane, hitting the brakes every 50 feet because he's speaking on his mobile phone. And I also, Cadillac showed its Q infotainment system recently. You've probably seen it.
Yeah, we had a guest on Autoline After Hours a few weeks ago, the guy, the guru of it.
One thing I found impressive about the system, and I'm sure Cadillac's not the only one that will do this or could do this. I'd like to see Ford work on this with its Sync and its My Ford Touch, is that it can recognize, because it's that haptic kind of, as you reach for the dashboard, it
turns on.
Zooms in.
Yes.
So it can tell whether the hand is coming from the driver's seat or the passenger's seat. So although they're not doing this yet, if they wanted to have a nav system where the driver cannot type in a nav address while he's driving, but his passenger can, it can do that. So
I loved when Chrysler had that button that says, are you not the driver? And you could say, no, I'm not the driver, and then type in whatever you wanted.
Sure. But this would actually be able to tell. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know whether it's that sophisticated or not. But, I mean, that's certainly maybe a solution going down the road. You know, I don't want to take away freedoms from the driver, but I want drivers to be drivers, not to be people speaking on the phone.
I hate to see it coming. Yeah, I hate to see it coming from Washington. I mean, clearly, the dumbing down of the driving abilities of the American public has been going on for quite a while.
Yeah.
Well, I think a couple of things. That one, I like that the discussion is finally coming out that the little thing that you stick in your ear makes you look like a douchebag isn't helping your driving at all. You have both hands on the wheel, but you don't have anything none of your mind is on the road.
Yeah.
And I think it's good that we have the discussion and people know that when you talk on the phone, you're more dangerous behind the wheel.
Yeah.
I mean, all of us have been on the road where 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I would have said, oh, this guy in front of me is drunk because he's swerving a little bit. They can't keep in their lanes. And now I just assume that
he's on the phone.
He's on the phone.
Or she's on the phone.
You'd almost wish that person was drunk and still on the phone.
You know, it's. I mean, if you're going to talk on the phone, go all the way over on the right-hand lane. be considerate to the other people that are driving. You know that you're more dangerous. So just try to be a little bit more responsible about it. I mean, we're not going to get rid of phones in cars. People are going to do it. And if you make it illegal, they'll just try to do it in different ways.
And better yet, pull over.
Yeah.
You know? And if you have a passenger, hand the phone to your passenger. I mean, he or she's going to hear the conversation anyway. And why not have that person, make the call?
I don't like talking on the phone when I'm driving. And almost all of my conversations are typically relatively short, and I can talk to you later. I think that that's the good thing that's come out of it. The bad thing is look, we're Americans. We do things, and risk is associated with it. If we didn't want anybody to die in car accidents, we'd get rid of cars. But we're willing to accept 35,000 to 40,000 people die every year in cars so that I can drive a car, or you can drive a car. Mm-hmm. And so certain freedoms come the fact that some people will die.
The alternative to taking away some of those freedoms is that you have companies like Google and General Motors, and probably a lot of other companies we're not quite aware of, working on autonomous cars so that people can spend all their time Googling while riding to work.
If they choose to hook up to the autonomous lane,
they
can do that.
At what point do the autonomous lanes become four out of the five?
John and I have joked about that. Then the enthusiasts will only come out at night. You know, there's certain times when the enthusiasts can bring their non-guided vehicles out. I mean, you know, I can see that.
But I thought that one of the most interesting things I read was that talking on your cell phone was the number four reason of distracted driving. In front of that was eating. No one has banned drive-thrus.
That's un-American.
Now, with your stereo, which is more dangerous than talking on your phone, reaching down for that CD or something that dropped.
And I'm not sure I agree with playing with your stereo is more difficult. It is if you're driving a My Ford Touch.
If
you have two radio knobs and you reach over and you can hear the station's changing, if it's easy to do it, and a lot of cars aren't anymore, it's
on your steering wheel, too.
I mean, can you imagine if the NTSB came out and said, we want to ban eating in cars? I mean, Americans just laugh.
Well, and remember, this is a recommendation. They're not.
Yeah, I know.
You can't do that. It's a state-by-state thing. Yeah. So as long as that remains the situation, I think we're going to see a long struggle to get to, 50 states.
I mean, clearly, net-net, as we'd all love the quality of the drivers and their driving to be better. I don't think this addresses that. I think the way we go about driver's education, if we tried to fix it, would be so costly. It's never going to happen.
Well, of course. And that said, I mean, it took, I think, the NTSB, and it certainly took a push to get all states to impose seatbelt laws before drivers, other than you, me, the three of us, used seatbelts. I mean, the seatbelt use was awful until that happened. So it's horrible to see that that's what you have to do to get people to drive with some responsibility.
Yeah. Say, Todd, since you are on the panel, I understand, for the North American Car and Truck of the Year finalists, maybe we can talk about that. Let's see. That's in conjunction with the Detroit Auto Show, because I hate calling it the North American. I won't. It's the Detroit Auto Show. But they do a Car and Truck of the Year awards in conjunction with that. The cars this year are the Ford Focus, the Hyundai Elantra, the Volkswagen Passat, and the trucks are the BMW X3 isn't a truck to me. It's like a crossover, but whatever. Honda CR-V and the Range Rover Evoque. So what do you guys think of those, Todd?
I need to correct you, unfortunately.
You're not on the panel?
I'm on the panel of the Motor Trend Car of the Year and the Motor Trend Sport Utility and Truck of the Year.
Okay,
I'm not on that.
So none of us are on.
There are no Motor
good.
Trend.
So let's back up. So the Motor Trend Truck of the Year was the F-150, correct?
Yes, the EcoBoost specifically. Although I should correct myself, I was not on that panel, but I did participate in Car and Sport Utility of the
Year. Too many disclaimers, Todd. Too many disclaimers.
Well, I can.
So you were on the car one, right?
Car one.
And what was that?
We picked the VW Passat, mm-hmm. but only by a hair. There was a split vote on the first and second ballot between the VW Passat and the Chrysler 300. Mm-hmm. And on the third ballot, the VW Passat edged out the Chrysler 300.
Interesting. And the Passat shows up on the North American Car and Truck of the Year. What do you guys think of the list? I think the Focus definitely belongs there, and so does the Elantra. And the significance of the Passat, although I really think the only Passat I would be interested in is dependent on how you order it. I mean, if it's ordered properly, I think the Passat is significant only because where it's built and Volkswagen's push in this market. I haven't driven it,
I think it's significant in part because they're doing the opposite of what Ford and Chevy are doing with a one-world kind of mid-sized car. You know, whether that's a better strategy or not we won't know probably for a few years until we see how sales compare.
Yeah.
But I think that is pretty interesting how they finally did one dedicated to the U.S. North American industry, and it's larger than the European Passat. It's got a lot of room in it. Good fuel mileage with the i5, which is not my favorite engine, and with the TDI, which in this category might be my favorite engine. I mean, you know, 43 mpg highway with the 6-speed. I wrote a story a long time ago saying that the VR6 was pretty much unnecessary, and I think that's probably true.
And I think the
Passat and Evoque win.
Huh?
Passat and Evoque win.
Oh, that's what we chose. We chose both the Passat and the Evoque for Car of the Year and Sport Utility of the Year.
I think that Elantra and Focus split the vote, both stylized compacts. The Focus is the premium version of that. The Elantra is bigger bang for your buck. Yeah. But they're both basically 40 mpg compact cars. The Passat, that was a car I was really looking forward to hating, and I liked it. It's a nice car, and the diesel with the DSG is uber fabulous.
Yeah, the styling isn't exceptional, and we've seen a few previews of stuff that is kind of exceptional in that category, but I think it does everything well. We had a problem with the Focus, frankly, and I know you're a big fan of the car. But
well,
they were reluctant to give us a select shift version, a power shift version of the car.
I've driven
the
both versions.
The transmission.
I mean, I like the car itself. I like the manual gearbox one, the select shift transmission.
I think when you have problems with your transmission on the year that you're launched, you should not really qualify to be the car of the year.
You had problems, so they wouldn't give me one.
We had driven earlier ones before our Car of the Year competition came up because the car launched early in the year, and I can't remember whether we even ever got one. We had 35 entrants for Car of the Year this year. There were all kinds of cars, and I have to say, probably third behind those two cars, and you may disagree. We rather liked the Buick Verano. And if you look at a Ford Focus Titanium, those things are running. That's a competitor for the Buick Verano. Loaded up Focus with all the luxury
price
items.
Point.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come back to this, Ben. Let's hear from our next sponsor, Bridgestone.
Look at this. Bridgestone's using natural rubber, researching ways to enhance its quality and performance, and making their factories more environmentally friendly, producing products that save on fuel and emissions, and some that can be reused again, and promoting eco-friendly and safety driving campaigns. One team, one planet. Bridgestone.
Yeah, so that's too bad about... I mean, I like the Focus. I look forward to the ST Focus.
Mm-hmm.
I've found with the select shift transmission, and I know what consumers are saying in stop-and-go driving. They're not used to that kind of transmission, and it'll do the jerk thing. But when you hammer it, it's great. You know, it works great. But
they also... I think they probably held back on... the car was off to a pretty good start in terms of sales, but And they kept talking about how there were supply problems keeping up with demand. I think some of those supply problems might have been holding back the cars and fixing the transmission. So that was kind of a serious thing. That said, I just drove an improved one, and it is much better.
Yeah.
Fine for me, fine for an enthusiast, especially using the manual control. But I think, you know, it's still the average buyer might take a little getting used to.
Yeah. And what about the truck side? I think the X3 is sensational. I think it drives great. I haven't driven the CR-V, and I already anointed the Range Rover Evoque like one of the vehicles of the year like a couple months ago. I just think it's going to be red hot in the market.
It's brilliant. Yeah. Very well done.
And if you look at what a vehicle does to the brand itself, I think that the Evoque does something more than just fill in a new spot. I think it really kind of moves Land Rover in the mind of the public. And that really says something, and you want something more meaningful.
Well, I think it's going to, you know, I think the dealers are going to be shocked. I think people are going to be coming in that didn't really pay any attention to Range Rover at all. And they see the Evoque on the road because it looks great on the road. And they're going to want to come in and, you know, I think it's going to be the biggest seller they have, obviously, using a Ford engine, by the way.
Exactly. And extra credit for doing a two-door version of it, which they showed as a concept. But you think, well, you know, how many two-door concept crossovers have you seen in the last 10 years? And they actually put that into production. Now, they might only sell 10 of them, but at least they put it out there.
Yeah, no, it's a dramatic design statement. It really is.
I think the other thing that the finalists in the truck roundup for the NACTOY award it's really shown us the evolution of the truck and what we call a truck and what is considered a truck. The fact that there weren't any body on frame, I don't know the last time we had a body on frame
sport utility.
Yeah. That was in that group.
That was a finalist. Yeah. I've always only voted on Motor Trend Car of the Year, so I'm not. I don't remember all those, but.
But just going back the last 5 years, you're going, where was it other than pickups?
Yeah, I mean, that was fortunate for us that we split off truck and sport utility back in the 90s, you know, even before I was at Motor Trend, and Nakody and Natodi are still dealing with that. Obviously, the sport utilities, 11 years ago when I was on my first Motor Trend Sport Utility of the Year, they were split between body and frame and unibodies. Now they're mostly unibodies.
Well, as CAFE rules come and all of these things that are they're coming into play, we're going to see more of that. I mean, the HHR is a truck. There's a whole bunch of vehicles.
Oh, it's going away, too.
But, you know,
it hasn't already. I don't recall.
This was last year.
Is it last year? Yeah. But you look at the things that qualify as trucks, and when is it to your advantage? When is it to your disadvantage? And
things like the PT Cruiser and even the Dodge Magnum in the past, depending on whether it had a flat load floor. I think some vehicles were classified one way by the... Let me see if I can get this straight. By the EPA, and another way by NHTSA, but depending on which federal agency, it could go either way.
So, what do you guys think are some of the most significant developments in the industry this year? I mean, I had a few. The downward slide of electrification. I mean, just as we're seen some creative electrification stuff going on, I'm just wondering about it. Is it going to take off, or is it going to just hover in this kind of sort of like it stage? The other is, I really think we're at the end of the high performance era. This is it. Will there be new definitions? I'm sure, but this is the end of the probably the ground pounders, unless you're going to spend a lot of money. And then, you know, we can talk about Chrysler, Ford, GM, Toyota, BMW, Mercedes, whatever we want to do. What do you guys think of the year?
Well, one of the biggest stories, I think, of the year was the tsunami.
Yeah.
And the after effect of that. And the thing that I find really interesting is that I really believe that, in particular, Toyota was going to have a drop-off of customers anyway. I think that because of the Americans coming in with such great compact cars, the Fusion and the Cruze, by the time the tsunami came, the Cruze was in full force.
The Fruz, that would be the combo of the two, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. And
if Durant had been able to buy Ford, he'd be driving Ford Fruzes.
But that tsunami really, I mean, it was horrible what happened. But the after effects of that is that we've never seen a real big recovery. And I don't know how much of a recovery we're going to see, even though the supplies are now coming in.
Well, especially with the position of the yen. I mean, I think we're seeing the sunset on the Japanese car industry.
With the currency the way it is, it's going to be impossible to
As
really...
As a dominant player, when you have somebody like Hyundai Kia...
I agree. I think there's going to be a certain amount of inertia that has made the Corolla, for example, one of the best sellers for years and years.
Oh, there's a lot of inertia left on the market.
So, I mean, the fact that, the Corolla, in terms of where it was in that segment, had been slipping already and still sold, 250,000 a year or whatever, and now the Civic... kind of in the same category. It takes a while to get people out of Hondas and Toyotas and into those other cars, even as they improve and do better.
I mean, there was all new Camry this year.
Yeah.
This is the first we've mentioned it. I mean, it's on nobody's list for anything.
No, it's not. And it's not like the Honda Civic, where the Civic actually slipped in terms of the design and the quality.
The Camry's a very competent car.
Yeah. Some improvements, but not anything earth-shattering in an era where you're getting so much more competition, finally from the U.S. automakers and certainly from the Koreans, and now from Volkswagen, that, sooner or later, even those loyal buyers of Honda Accords, Toyota Camrys, Corollas, and so on, will start to look elsewhere.
Yeah, so I figured in the high point of the frenzy about the unintended acceleration, which was, of course, proved to be totally bogus, I figured 20% of the Toyota buyers decided they would see what's out there. The rest of them stayed true. But those 20%, could grow. Because there's a lot of great choices, whereas before, you're in the market for a compact, it's Toyota or Honda. Now, it's Toyota, Honda, Hyundai, Chevrolet, Ford, Chrysler's going to have the Dart coming in the spring. I mean, it's a whole new world.
Yeah. Some of that inertia that I spoke of is that, the Toyota buyers, the Camry buyers, when they couldn't buy a Camry, went elsewhere, but they went to the Nissan Altima, which had a few spikes. So the first matter of business is, we look at another Japanese brand, and probably a lot of those buyers went back and forth to begin with between Camry and Accord. And maybe the next step will be, we'll look at Hyundai that's vaguely the same, or Kia. And I think, despite all the strides being made by GM, Ford, and Chrysler, that will be kind of the last step. It will happen, but it will be the last step. And I think it will probably happen with the younger buyers who won't buy what their parents bought. I kind of agree. I think it's the end of the V8 as a mainstream engine. But,
I'm not saying it's the end of performance, but, yeah. I think,
as we know it.
Yeah, the traditional V8s will be harder to come by.
I remember thinking it was the end of performance as we know it in the 70s. We're old enough to remember that era.
Well, that was pretty close when the Camaro Z28 had 165
precisely
horsepower. Yeah. It was pretty grim.
I think, four-cylinder turbos and the like will have a lot to do with that in the future, and I think the V8 will be
a premium.
What the V12 is today.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to just start counting brands that don't have V8s, and Buick got rid of the V8 this year. And
I'm a big booster of V8s, and I hope they survive, and I think they will. We'll have to pay a lot, but here's Bentley offering a new Continental with a V8 instead of the 12, and I think that's going to be a sensational car because I love the 12, but I could imagine the V8 would be at least 300 pounds lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And still have a bunch of horsepower. But I just think, we'll see turbos, V6s and 4s, and V8s will be harder to come by, and it'll be very expensive if you want one. But they'll still be there.
Yeah, I agree.
What else happened this year that you thought?
Well, kind of in connection with, what we've been talking about with Toyota and Honda and the American industry, kind of the emergence of the auto industry as
the one semi-bright spot in the economy, and that, you know, these companies did reorganize, whether you like the way it happened with GM and Chrysler or not, it happened and they're still here. Mm-hmm. And they are a bright spot, and they can make money in a 13 million car year with 18, 19, 20% for GM, lower market share for Chrysler and Ford. They can make money, and they can make money on small cars, apparently, or at least they claim they can. So I think that's one of the big stories. Scott, I don't want to...
Well, I would say the emergence of the Bolt, in the time and effort they had to do it under severe conditions pre and during bankruptcy, they still...
Yeah.
I think the Bolt is still a technological achievement, and it's unfortunate what's happened. I wrote a column a couple weeks ago saying that, you know, the Bolt is a technological achievement.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that it was pulled off in just dire times for GM.
And it's getting a little bit of the Toyota unintended acceleration treatment right now. And actually, I was not surprised when GM said, okay, we'll give you a loaner car if you're concerned about your Chevy Volt. But then when hours or days later they said, we'll buy it back from you, I don't know that they needed to do that.
Yeah, I think that was overreaching. GM's handling of it, you know, they did the classic, well, we're going to get out in front of this, you know, classic PR 101, we have to get out in front of bad news. But I think they overreacted, and it didn't help that Dan Akerson didn't seem to be on the same page.
Right.
Because a day of after the media conference with Mark Royce and Mary Barra, he was saying, well, I don't know, we might have a problem with the battery. It's just like, you know, he can't be saying stuff like that.
Yeah, he does go off script, which is both refreshing and scary for someone in.
Well, you know, it was refreshing with Lutz.
It's refreshing because we're not used to guys going off script.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and I thought he learned his lessons after that pretty disastrous interview with the Detroit News.
Mm-hmm.
But then here he was at the exact time where he needed to not talk.
Peter, what it comes down to is cars in a severe accident, you drain the gas tank
right
when it's stored. You have to drain the battery pack, too.
Exactly. And it's not, you know, like I explained in the column when I wrote about it, it's just like, yeah, we live in this 24/7 communication quagmire. And the only thing that people out in social media land took away was Volts catch fire. They didn't.
I thought that overall that it wasn't handled as badly as it could have been handled. I mean, which is a compliment.
Damning with faint praise, aren't we?
And the bigger thing is, I think, is something that you'd mentioned earlier, which is the electrification of the fleets of the world is going a lot slower than I think we were given the first impression. I don't know how wide the pipe is. Is it going to be in 10 years 150,000 vehicles out of the total market segment? Is it going to be 10% of the market segment? I mean, right now it's very minuscule, and consumers are only going to learn more in 2012 that pure electric vehicles are really, really expensive.
Well, I think when we have politicians in Washington and Northern California trying to dictate consumer tastes, it's not going to go well. I mean, I think electric vehicles, there's going to be a place for them. There should be a place for advanced turbo diesels. There should be a place for ICEs that get 40 and 50 miles per gallon. It's going to be this kaleidoscope of transportation solutions.
Yeah.
But the moment politicians say, oh, no, we're going to be electrified, baby, it just doesn't work. And yeah, they're frightfully expensive.
And none of them are making money. I mean,
there's no money being.
Well, and this is, you know, if you go back a century, I mean, this is the way the auto industry started. You had new technologies, and they were only for the very rich until you got production going and ran some holes, and then Henry Ford, building more than one car, that was kind of the same way.
Yeah.
And
So, yeah, if you look at what other countries do, there's always some sort of incentive for some of these technologies. I think there's a place for them. I think there's going to be a slowly growing interest in cars like the Chevy Volt, the Nissan Leaf, because you can go maybe 65 miles between charges, is going to be a very limited sort of car.
And the new Ford Focus, which they're, you know, just is coming out.
And which is going to cost $39,000.
Yeah. So it's $40,000 for a Focus.
And
is that titanium then?
I hope so. And meanwhile, to your point, we've got you get an 8-speed automatic transmission and a Chrysler 300 with a V6. You get 31 mpg highway.
You're getting compact cars that regularly get over 40.
Mm-hmm.
The LaCrosse is beating subcompacts. I mean,
the E-Assist. Yeah.
The E-Assist LaCrosse beats subcompacts. It's a large sedan.
Well, we're going to take a break, Ben. Let's thank our next sponsor, Hyundai Sonata.
The sixth generation of the Hyundai Sonata is taking the industry by storm, and no wonder. It offers a fluidic design theme that gives it a strikingly modern, coupe-like exterior design, and yet the interior provides the roominess of a full-size car as measured by the EPA. The Sonata also provides an eco-friendly interior with soy-based foam for the seats. Put it all together with Hyundai's strong reliability and value proposition, and you've got yourself a really compelling package. Check it all out at HyundaiSonata.com.
Okay, Ben, let's run the rapid fire.
Traffic and directions.
And we had tacos.
I hear that, and I didn't have time for lunch today.
All right. Well, welcome. Here we are. Let's see. Mike D. White, which is a greater threat to Ford Focus sales, transmission and My Ford Touch concerns or competition from incentivized fusions and escapes?
I would take the latter.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you know, the compacts, we've had two new compacts this year. The Cruze started late last year, but... that helped push compact sales this year. Next year, we're going to have a bunch of new midsize cars, including the new Chevy Malibu.
The new Fusion, which is really great looking.
Yeah, it is. And that will take the midsize segment back and
up,
put it up.
I don't think people are quite prepared for the Fusion, but when they see it, they'll know what we're talking about. Unsprung says, why hasn't someone involved in a cell phone accident caused accidents, sue the cell phone company? They sue bars over drunk driving and gun stores over shooting. I'm sure there's probably someone who has sued.
Honda was sued years and years ago for not providing airbags in the late 80s model, even though they weren't required by law back then. So,
yeah. This is for you, Ted. Prehistoric says, did the new 300 go too upmarket over the original 300 in terms of price?
I don't think so, because you still have the Dodge Charger, and I think you need that sort of separation between Chrysler and Dodge.
George from Brooklyn says, what does the panel think of the new Dodge Dart? I haven't seen the Dart. I've seen
it, but I can't say it.
My lips are sealed.
Yeah.
I've got a gag order.
DC Auto Geek says, will the EPA change their drive cycle test to give the OEMs credit for stop start?
They need to. As soon as they do it, every car will have stop start.
This is a very confusing thing because there will be a couple of cars offering stop start next year. And I've asked about that, and in both cases they've said, oh, it does show up. So I don't know. I haven't had time to look into the changes or what's happened.
I like stop start. I mean, you know, I was telling Scott before he got here, I was driving the new 911 Carrera S manual. Mm-hmm. And I was just not paying attention. I forgot it had stop start, and it stopped. And I thought I had stalled it.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny. It's cool. I really like it.
The average driver is going to have to get used to it, but overall, it'll work.
Crayon breaking, Peter, for the Camaro refresher redesign, how can Chevy change the car enough, or are they stuck with the basic current look? Now, if I'm not mistaken, isn't the next Camaro on a different platform?
Yes, they've got three more years. It's going to share its platform, because I wrote about this a long time ago, with the Cadillac ATS.
So it's going to be smaller.
Well, it should be lighter. That platform will also accommodate the next Cadillac CTS. So that part is unclear. I think it should be smaller.
my opinion, it should be more like a 3 Series size or
Hyundai. We know it'll be lighter, but...
Yeah.
George from Brooklyn, question for the show. Have you ever considered live streaming episodes on YouTube? Ben, I have no idea.
Once we're invited, we will.
They have to invite you?
Okay. Glenn East said, is that a Ford or Chevy truck on the wall behind John's seat where I'm sitting? That's a Ford truck over there.
That's a Ford, yeah.
F-100.
Yeah.
Ben, let's go to some phone calls.
It's John Dunlap. I live in the Ozarks. I'm a retired old automotive man. I have one thought on all these electric cars. The only one right now that I really would consider would be the Volt, because most of them, they kill your freedom. Your ability to pull up and get fuel 10 minutes going about your way is over. And until they get that question licked, they got a serious problem. That's my feeling. Thank you. Bye.
Well, thanks for coming. My thought on that, until you can go pull into some re-energizing station and spend no more time than you do filling your tank with an electric car, they're never going to be massly accepted. They're just not. I mean, that's just my... Because it's human nature.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yep.
Okay, Ben, let's take another phone call.
Hi, this is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. I would like to hear the panel's thoughts on the recent announcement that the next generation Viper will not be branded as a Dodge. Is this a good move or a bad move? And is this another ominous sign for the future of the Dodge brand, or should we not read that much into it? Bye.
It's going to be called Chrysler Viper, right?
SRT Viper, apparently. And on the one hand, it does separate out that model and say, okay, we no longer have a Dodge that's way more expensive than our more expensive Chrysler. On the other hand, they've also separated out Ram from the Dodge truck brand as a separate brand from Dodge.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that's a good thing.
I don't think it's a good thing. They all go in the same dealers. They're going to have more brands than GM had.
Yeah, yeah.
They have 4 now.
Yeah.
So SRT is a brand.
So they're tied with General Motors.
Yeah.
In
Dodge,
the U.S.
Chrysler and Fiat.
I don't think they...
Dodge, Chrysler... Oh, they've got Dodge, Chrysler, Jeep, Ram, Fiat.
They have more than
SRT,
GM.
So they have more than GM. Yeah.
You know, I just think the Ram split from Dodge was really lame. I just don't agree with it at all. Ben, let's take another phone call.
Hey, guys. DC Auto Geek, long-time listener, first-time caller. I know you may have probably already beat this topic to death, but going back to the NTSB and the cell phone ban, when you actually read into the case the accident that brought that up, the accident of the two buses were both caused because of poor driver error. When one bus driver was tailgating the other bus and one bus was staring at an RV that was parked on the side of the road, so only one vehicle was actually involved in the whole texting fiasco. Do you think this is just an instance where the administration is pushing something that's not really there to bring more attention to this issue when we really should be educating drivers and not telling them what to use and what not to use and basically telling them to pay attention regardless of what they're doing? Thanks.
Well, we kind of covered that. I mean,
supposedly the driver, and I only kind of skimmed it, but the driver who started the chain of events
reaction,
was in a GMC Sierra, where he had received and sent 11 text messages in the 11 minutes prior, or was it in the 1 minute prior to the accident? I think it was 11 minutes prior to the accident. So, and he was apparently texting. They were able to pinpoint that when the chain reaction started.
Well, look,
just reporting the facts.
Yeah, if everything was wonderful and beautiful in this country and we weren't in a recession and people weren't, you know, worrying about jobs, you know, and we had plenty of money, we might be able to upgrade our driver education system, but that isn't going to happen anytime soon. So,
no.
We don't have a driver's education system.
Yeah, we don't.
No, we don't.
And, I mean, school, that's the first thing you get rid of right after arts. And,
it's all a la carte now. You pay a little agency to do it, and then you got the whole thing about it. A lot of young kids aren't really anxious to get their driver's license.
Well, you know, I know in Germany, when I lived there, that it was about $2,000 in instruction to get your driver's license. You would pay it, you'd wait till you're 18, pay the money. It took 6 months of training, and then you would have your driver's license, and it was good for life. But if they took it away, you never got it back. And so
wow.
I think that if people invest $2,000 to get a driver's license, then they would pay more attention to it. But
okay. Ben, you want to do another phone call?
Yes. Hey, this is Warren from Paris, California. I'd just like to make a comment on the proposed legislation for the cell phone use. Hopefully, the federal government will be a little more considerate, I guess, is the word for it, instead of taking after California as they rubber stamp they normally do. Here in California, you could be over on the side of the road sitting there, but if their key is in the ignition, you could get written up for using your cell phone, which is totally ridiculous. I mean, they do the same thing if you're washing your car and you have the radio on in the car with the key in the ignition. They could write you up for an open container or what have you.
Yeah, there would seem to be a disincentive.
The government will be a little more realistic.
Well, that would seem to be a disincentive to, you know, normally you'd want people to pull over to the side of the road and use their mobile phones. But remember, again, the NTSB recommendation is only a recommendation, and they are making the recommendation to 50 states and D.C., and so it's up to the states, and unfortunately, you already have what you've got in California.
I think anything coming from California should not actually be considered part of the federal government. It should be more of just the California government, California rules, and maybe cut off the map.
As long as we can do the same with Texas.
I'm fine. Yeah.
So Hans Sprung says, my question is, can you do a burnout with a stop-start car? Yeah, sure. You just put your foot on the gas and the motor starts and hold your foot on the brake. And yeah, you can do it.
Plus, you can usually turn those off.
Yeah. Steve says, isn't the solution for electric cars using a wet battery in which you would be able to charge your battery at home or refill it by removing the decharge part and adding new charge part at a station? Something very similar to what's currently done in gas cars. Well, you know, we'll see what happens. But like I say, until you can spend 5 minutes in a gas station.
Does that mean you also clean it with Arm & Hammer and water or what?
Okay, Ben, we have another phone call?
Hi, this is Ace in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. I was wondering if you would say the biggest sin of the American auto industry was big on the outside, small on the inside. Thank you.
I wish that was just the U.S. auto industry. Actually, you could probably say that a little bit about the Mini Cooper, which is a car I like, but not like the original Mini, where it was big on the outside and small on the inside. Some of that might, I think we're going to see a little bit of a change in that in some of these new midsize cars. And by the way, go pack.
Yeah. Let's see what else we have here. I didn't do all of these. Oh yeah. How about Fisker, how about Tom Lasorda signing up to be vice chairman of...
And Richard Beatty as, marketing chief, I think?
Yeah.
They've been quiet for a long time, Fisker.
Their prices have gone up, and, you know, Lasorda will probably be a breath of reality, but, you know...
The other thing they announced is that apparently the price is going to start now above $100,000, which if they had announced that before we had Car of the Year, we wouldn't have had the car in Car of the Year and probably would have done them a lot of favors not to have that car in Car of the Year. It was a science experiment, and I think hiring a lot of executives laid off from other companies won't make it any less of a science experiment than the one we drove in September.
Well, I think the hangover from shelling out big money to Fisker and Tesla, government money, is not going to sit well with people down the road when these companies sort of never amount.
No one ever mentions them.
Yeah.
They got big money from the government, but then they don't have enough other kind of capital. They're still operating like the auto business is a millions of dollars industry. It's not. It's a billions of dollars industry, no matter how small you are.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Which Saab has found out fatally.
Yes. Well, it's not quite dead yet.
No. Well, I think we've come to the end of the road here, but I'd like to thank all you out there for talking amongst yourselves and not paying attention to what we're saying, just saying. And you can read Scott Burgess' stuff at DetroitNews.com and at Twitter.com/AutoCritic, because that's what he does. And Todd can be found at Twitter.com/MT_Lassa, or, of course, in Motor Trend at MotorTrend.com. And you can visit my website at AutoExtremist.com, of course, Twitter.com/AutoExtremist, and Facebook.com/AutoExtremist. And I'd like to thank A.J. Morning, who really maintains our Facebook page. I don't go on it, and he lectures me all the time about the fact that I don't go on it. You have to go on it. Okay. Make sure you check out AutoLine this week with guest Mark Fields, president of Ford of the Americas. And you can watch it at AutoLine.tv starting tomorrow, or check your local listings to see if your public television station carries AutoLine. And more stations are being added every week as we speak, so it's a good thing. And you can follow AutoLine, John McElroy's mega empire, on Twitter at twitter.com/AutoLine. And don't forget, you can also friend the AutoLine gang on Facebook to get all kinds of content throughout the week. And you can find the AutoLine page at facebook.com/AutoLineDetroit. And thanks again, guys, for being with us tonight, helping me out. And thanks to everyone out there joining us live. We'll see you next week for the final AutoLine After Hours of 2011, where we will present our naughty and nice lists for the year. Thanks again.
Visit our website, AutoLine.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at AutoLine.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.